Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Scott Burton. I'm your Tuesday host. Got a fun show lined up for you today. We have in for the Mudrooms Rich Moniak and Christy Chiambor. We'll be telling us about tomorrow night's event. Charlene Smith and Jeff Kirsch will be here telling us about the Juno Montessori School's Valentine's Day beer and wine tasting. Kirk Duncan will be here from, he's the CBJ director in Public Works, telling us about the Juno Water and Wastewater Rate Study and the public meetings. Mr. Ben Kriegmont, all the way over from Douglas Island, Gatineau Elementary, will be telling us about the chess club. Kristen Garreau, Principal Kristen Garreau from Yakus Yadakahiti, will be in. National Native News, Writer's Almanac, music, and more here on a Juno Afternoon, February 11th, 2014. Here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Officials are examining issues with the justice system in Indian Country. Major crime cases on tribal lands often go through the federal court system. In states like Wyoming, federal courts are far away from the reservation, which causes challenges. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhurov has more.
The geographic distance of courts from the communities they serve brings up logistical issues. In Wyoming, the Wind River Indian Reservation has high rates of poverty, and people often lack reliable vehicles or the funds to make a trip to the Cheyenne Federal Courthouse, which is 300 miles away. Public transportation is extremely limited, and in the winter, roads are often dangerous. Plus, as Assistant U.S. Attorney Carrie Jacobson says, justice is not happening in the communities where the crime was committed.
I would like to see cases brought to trial in our area because then the community could see what the process is and that the process is fair and it does work because they lose faith in the system.
In addition, she says a local trial could result in a more representative jury, which rarely happens now.
You'll have people that have not been to the reservation, that do not participate in any sort of Native American traditions or social activities, never heard of a powwow or a sweat or anything like that, things that are prevalent in the facts that we're going to present to them.
A recent report by the Indian Law and Order Commission highlighted this problem as one of the obstacles to justice and public safety in Indian Country. Commissioners will testify about the report's findings and recommendations in front of the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs on Wednesday. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhurov.
Cold weather continues on the northern plains and propane is out of reach for many tribal residents. A Minnesota tribe is stepping in to help. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
An estimated 5,000 homes on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation depend on propane for heating. The reservation, which straddles South Dakota and North Dakota, is dealing with a very sharp spike in propane prices. A Minnesota tribe with a history of charitable giving is stepping in to help. The Shakopee Midwakaton Sioux tribe is supplying $500,000 for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe to buy propane. North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple has also offered that state's help to ease conditions. The Shakopee Midwakaton is also assisting two other tribes with propane issues. The Yankton Sioux Tribe in southeast South Dakota will receive $300,000 for propane, and the Santee Sioux Nation in Nebraska is set to receive $70,000. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
An Indigenous Earth Issue Summit is set to take place next week at Northern Michigan University. Great Lakes mining activism will be the focus. Native speakers will discuss how to organize and take action against what they say are mining threats facing Michigan's Upper Peninsula and Northern Minnesota and Northern Wisconsin. Presenters include activists and tribal leaders. The event is being presented by the Native American Studies Center and the Keweenaw Indian Community. Hoop dancer Derek Sawaima Davis won the Heard Museum's World Championship Hoop Dance Contest Adult Division. World champs were also named among seniors, teens, and youth. Competitors from across the U.S. and Canada took part in the event over the weekend in Phoenix, Arizona. Dancers were judged on skills like precision, creativeness, and speed. In February 2013, the Michigan Department of Civil Rights filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights asking to prohibit Indian mascots in schools. The Michigan Department said research shows Indian mascots negatively impact student learning. The complaint identified 35 public schools. The Department of Education later dismissed the complaint, citing lack of sufficient evidence. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org.
Join us for Kawanic's 2014 Alaska Native Art Auction, Thursday, February 20th in Anchorage, Alaska. Ticket and reservation information is available by going to nativeartauction.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Scott Burton, your Tuesday host here on February 11th, 2014, and I've been joined in the studio by Rich Moniak and Christy Chambor. Welcome, you two.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in. And Rich, you're on the board of directors, is that correct?
The story board. It's not a formal nonprofit. It's not a board of directors. We're more fun than that.
All right. I think a lot of us out there probably know what Mudrooms is by now, but there may be a few listeners who don't. Can you give us a little synopsis?
Well, it's a live storytelling event. Seven people tell a seven-minute personal story on stage around a different theme each month. We've been doing it. This is the third season. The audience has grown quite a bit. The complexity and quality of the stories has grown quite a bit. It originated with an idea in on the East Coast, I think in Maryland, called Stoops, and somebody took that up to Anchorage, where it became Arctic Entries, and Amanda Compton saw that up there, brought it down here when she moved down here, and changed the name to Mudrooms. Doing the same thing, and I think that one difference in Juneau is we're a lot smaller, and it's a lot more personal because mm-hmm. People in the audience more, and it's a lot harder to find storytellers.
Right. And from what I understand, you also donate the proceeds to various nonprofits, is that correct?
That's correct. The first half of the year, which we just finished in January, went to Discovery Southeast, and the next four shows will go to Big Brothers Big Sisters.
All right. And I've been to a couple of these, and they are fine events. And like you said, the audience is growing. It's down at Northern Lights now, there in the Federal Flats, and last time I went there was barely an empty seat in the house. That's a big church.
Yeah. The first one they did was at the Rookery, and immediately outgrew that. And we went to Holy Trinity, and we had to pack chairs. We had to haul chairs and fill that place up, and people on a few events were standing outside. So Northern Light is working much better.
And in recognition of all the success, you recently received the Mayor's Award for Innovation in the Arts.
That's correct.
Congratulations.
On Sunday, thanks.
You
on
must.
Behalf of us, on Amanda and Alita in particular, and the whole board was excited about that.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great. And Christy, you are here because you are going to be telling a story tomorrow night.
I am, and that just made me even more nervous hearing you say that. I'm looking forward to it, though.
You're going to do great. The theme is On the Road, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. And without giving away your story, Christy, can you give us a teaser, a couple highlights, maybe?
Sure. It's going to be the story of how my husband, myself, and our newborn got to Juneau in one piece.
I think people will be able to relate to that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will, actually.
And one of the things I like about the event, too, is that these are unscripted. These are true oral tradition storytelling events. Right, Rich? I mean, people don't really take a script up with them, do they?
Some people have.
Okay.
Some people were more comfortable doing that. I think it's better, the more raw it is, the more genuine it is. Mm-hmm. I think the seven-minute thing makes it difficult, and we've encouraged people to practice because it's surprising how quick that goes by when you're telling a story.
Sure, sure. How have you, we're in the third year now. How have you seen this event grow? How has it changed? I know it's gotten bigger, but what are some other things you've noticed?
Well, the thing I've noticed from the very beginning is it's a not just a place to for storytellers to get up and talk, but it's really a quality listening event.
Mm.
I mean, I sit in the back usually. I've been doing the soundboard recording for a bit. But you look around, and it's not like being in a theater where people are chatting here and there during a movie or mm-hmm. something. I mean, people are really paying attention. It's very, very quiet. I think the stories have grown in quality just because people have gotten used to seeing that progression, and people are more interested in providing a meaningful story. It's not hard for, I mean, some people may have trouble coming up with a theme that fits, but I think most people are responding to the theme with a story they already have. And when you do that, I think the story is really true to your heart, and it just comes out pretty naturally. And whatever meaning you bring to it just shows. They've gotten more complex. There's been some more serious ones, and I think that's helped change the tone a bit. You know, it's not just a lot of laughter. It makes people think.
Yeah, absolutely. Christy, are you nervous for tomorrow?
I am, for sure.
Rich, what might be your advice to Christy? What are a few elements that you've seen in stories that go well?
Well, yeah, I did one. I was really, really nervous. In fact, I had to leave and missed the two stories before me and took a walk around town. I don't know where you are in the program. It helps to get it over with, I guess. I was last. But I think most people I've talked to, and for myself, once you get going, it just flows fairly easily. And don't get hung up on if you lose something. You know, don't worry about it. Just tell it like you would to a small audience.
Sure. One of the things I've seen too is like Folk Fest, for example. It's a great audience. They're there to listen. They're paying attention. They're there to laugh and there to applaud. So it's a very safe environment to tell stories in. So.
Yeah, and I think people are not judging you. We have, you know, it's not like, I think I've been to the Poetry Slam a few times. People are being judged on their performance, on their poetry. We don't do a judging type thing. It's every story is equal, you know, from the beginning. You know, certain stories are going to appeal to certain people, but I think every story has an appeal to some big group in the audience.
Absolutely. All right, so this is tomorrow night at the Northern Lights United Church. Correct?
That's correct.
Down in the Federal Flats down there. I believe, was that 10th Street in the Rome?
10th, I think it's 11th.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Near Cope Park, the entrance to Cope Park, kind of, by Gold Creek there. And what time does it start?
7. Music starts about 6:45, usually, maybe even earlier. And come early because it fills up. If you want to get a good seat, you got to definitely be early. And that's not an unusual thing for Juno. We're accustomed to being late.
All right. Anything else either of you would like to add?
No, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Rune.
Well, thanks you too, and good luck tomorrow for both of you.
Thanks, Scott.
Tell me a story of days gone by. I want to leave this life of mine. Nothing but sorrow and pain I find. Tell me a story of days. Tell me of princes, jesters, and kings, town fools, crown jewels, scepters, and rings, beauties and little girls lost in the woods. Tell me of axes, tell me of words, tell me of stories. Under the wave, pity's hope deep down in their cave.
right, there's the Barefoot Band with Tell Me a Story right there. I've just been joined in the studio by Charlene Smith and Jeff Kirsch.
Hi.
Welcome, you two.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, and you're here to talk about the Juno Montessori School and the Valentine's Beer and Wine Tasting Fundraiser.
Yeah.
Yep. Exciting.
Yeah. The Juno Montessori School has been, we've been in town here since 1985, working with toddlers and preschool children up through kindergarten.
All right. And physical location?
We're down on the way to Sandy Beach at 750 St. Anne's, just the big blue and white
building
on the way.
Yeah, the blue and white schoolhouse and the Mayflower building. Yep. Yeah, and the thing about it that I think is interesting, and so, I'm obviously a parent, and I'm also the president of the board, which is why I'm here. But, it's a community program, and it's open to the entire community of Juno, and, kind of following a need-blind admission policy, which means that, there's a significant amount of financial aid that, we need to raise, which is why we are, having this beer and wine fundraiser as the segue into it.
All right.
But, yeah. And it's for Valentine's Day, and it's really definitely more for, the parents of little... not just, obviously, for Juno Montessori parents, obviously for all parents, but it's kind of a, get a babysitter and come on out and taste some wine and some beer and support early childhood education.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Before we get into the details of the event,
sure.
For parents out there whose kids are in, let's say, public school or homeschool, what is Montessori? Can you give us a little description about, what makes Montessori-style school unique?
Montessori, it was started by Dr. Montessori in 1906, and basically what she did is she observed children in environments, and she basically designed her entire program on child development. She looked at the stages of development that children go through to become an adult, and she said if specially prepared environments were designed to meet the needs of the child at each stage of development,
mm-hmm.
that, people would be able to gain greater skills and move up as a human being, meeting all of their needs as they went along.
Okay.
So it just really supports people in becoming a more fulfilled person because they're reaching more of their needs.
Yeah, and it also kind of strives for independence. I remember the first time that I went in there to even look at the classroom, this is the toddler room, and these are, kids who are like a year
one
and a half old,
and
like,
2 years
old.
Making
bread, like making pizzas, and like, you're just like, how are they even, walking in and putting on their, there's a very, very specific process for everything, which is part of it too, and for anyone who has little kids, to actually, get out your materials and respect your materials, and then when you're finished with your materials, put your materials away, and that kind of thing. And, you even go and have lunch, because your parents are invited to have lunch at the school, and, it's literally sometimes, candles are lit, with, they're sitting there, a room full of 25 3- to 6-year-olds eating lunch with real cutlery and glasses and pouring water out of it. It's amazing, that kind of thing that goes on there, which is not to say that that's the only educational program around, but that idea was very attractive to me, and obviously enough to send both my kids there and then become president and then also again go on the radio and try and get people to come out and taste some beer and some wine.
All right, so let's talk about it. Where is it going to be, where and when, and then what's it going to look like?
So, it is on Valentine's Day itself, so it's a great, Valentine's Day activity, like a date night kind of thing. In fact, my wife is going, and we never go on dates anywhere, so we're going to go do this, which is fun. It's at the Hangar Ballroom, and it's 5 to 8, and that is... For $35, which we should probably mention too, you get as much beer and wine as you can taste, and that stuff has been donated by K&L Liquors and Specialty Imports, and also hot and cold hors d'oeuvres, and we're going to have an auction, and, for $35 per person, I would say, to go out, that's a,
What day does Valentine's fall?
It is Friday.
Friday,
yes.
February 14th?
It is Friday, February 14th.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like this Friday.
Yeah.
Yep, that is this Friday. So for those of you who are just coming to that realization.
And you don't have plans for your sweetheart, this is a great place to come. And
you're supporting education in
Juneau. That's right.
Well, sounds like a fine event. Is there anything else you two would like to add about it?
Just that we're going to have some really lovely desserts that have been donated, and we also have some really nice auction gifts, and we're going to have a live auction during the night, yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be the whole focus, the live auction, but there will be. I mean, and there's Temsco Helicopters donated a glacier trip, and then there's a zip line and Eagle Crest passes and massages and some. There's a caribou meat and a caribou hide for those of you who are in the market for either of those things. You will have to outbid me because I definitely would love to put some caribou in my freezer. And I don't hunt, so.
All right. Well, it sounds like a fine event. Again, that's at the Hangar Ballroom this Friday from 5 to 8.
Yep. And the tickets are $35, and you can get them at Hearthside, or you can get them at the door, or you can reserve them by calling Juno Montessori, and that number is
364-3535.
Yep. All right. Charlene Smith and Jeff Kirsch, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for
having us. Thank you for having us.
Good luck with the event.
Thanks.
I'm going to play some music now from the Young Dubliners. They're going to be playing at the Rockwell this Thursday and Friday. Maybe you could go after this event at the Hangar Ballroom, go out and see this band. Here you go.
The Glen one Easter morn to a city fair rode I. Those armored lines of marching men in squadrons passed me by. No pipe did hum, no battle drum did sound its dread tattoo, but the Angela's bells or the Liffey swell rang out o'er the foggy dew. Back through the glen I rode again,
and my heart with grief was sore. For I parted then with valiant men, whom I never will see no more. But to and fro in my dreams I go, and I'd kneel and pray for you. For slavery fled, O glorious dead, when you fell in the foggy dew.
All right, that was the Young Dubliners right there. They're going to be playing at the Rockwell this Thursday and Friday. Go check them out if you like. And I've just been joined in the studio by Mr. Kirk Duncan, the CBJ Director of Public Works. Welcome, Kirk.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for coming down today.
You betcha.
Looks like it's starting to try and snow out there a little bit.
It's snowing at Eagle Crest. I'm sure it wouldn't snow at sea level.
All right, so let's see. We are here today to talk about the Juneau Water and Wastewater Rate Study and some public meetings. Is that right?
Yep, we have a public meeting. We met with the Committee of the Whole last night, and tonight we have a meeting from 6 to 8 out at the Valley Library, and tomorrow from 7 to 9 at the Hangar Ballroom.
Okay.
Just to talk about, we need $72 million worth of water and wastewater improvements over the next 10 years, and how are we going to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
So we're just telling people how the rates are developed, and you know, giving them some ideas on what's going to happen to the various rates if the assembly accepts our recommendations. So, just an opportunity to give public. We will explain, and then they can have input.
Sure, I was thinking today. Sometimes, jobs as civil workers are is to put in a new lift or to put in a new dock, or I was thinking this is sort of like you have to replace the boiler at your house.
Yeah, there's nothing sexy about water and wastewater pipes. I mean, it's just, but unfortunately, it's all about quality of life, right?
Yeah.
And the minute water and wastewater isn't adequately taken care of, it has a major impact on your life.
Yeah, these are things that we rely on every day to keep life in Juneau, quality
exactly,
of life
like
high.
Next summer, the Department of Transportation is talking about redoing the Egan from 10th to Main, and there's a water main in there, and that's $1 million to replace that water main.
Mm.
We've got two projects out on Glacier Highway out near Walmart, between Western Otterall and Walmart, replacing some forced sewer line, as well as a lift station. And each of those is $1 million. So when it comes to $72 million over the next 10 years, it's not much of a stretch. Redeveloping the Last Chance Basin, doing some major upgrades to our sewage treatment plants, a lot of stuff going on.
I hear you. So people can go to the meeting either tonight, you says that downtown?
Tonight is at the Valley Library
From
6 until 8. And then tomorrow night at the Hangar Ballroom between 7 and 9, it's exactly the same presentation. Bill Wilkes, our consultant from the consulting group, is here to go through it, but people can come and see. Because what we're anticipating is probably a 9.5% increase in rates for each year for the next 5 years, and then 5% increase each year for the next 5 years of this 10-year rate study. So, it's not an insignificant increase.
People will notice.
Absolutely. And we want people to have input. One of our big things is when we go to the assembly, we've been working with them all along, but we want to make sure that we can say that we've done everything we possibly can. We've put out mail notices on the back of every utility billing envelope. We've been on, here today talking with you. We've been, have a website. You can go to JunoRateStudy.com to get more information. So as much active outreach as we can.
All right. So you can go to one of those meetings tonight or tomorrow to learn more about this. Kirk, is there anything you'd like to add about those?
No, I think it's just important that people know what's going on and come on out and share your opinions. We'd really like to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kirk, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 11th of February, 2014. It was on this day, 1778, that Voltaire returned to Paris after 28 years of exile. 300 people came to visit him his first day in the city, and one of them was Benjamin Franklin, who brought his grandson with him. When Voltaire rode in his carriage through the streets, his carriage could barely move because the street was packed with crowds of admirers. He died 2 months later. It was on this day, 1990, Nelson Mandela was released from prison outside Cape Town, South Africa, the Victor Verster prison where he'd been imprisoned for 27 years because of his activities with the African National Congress, resisting the apartheid government. The Congress had observed a philosophy of nonviolence for decades, but some members of the group, including Mandela, had begun advocating violence as the only way to deal with the violent regime. When Mandela was released, he was 71, and South Africans were shocked to see him. They had last seen him in 1964, publicly, when he went away to prison. 5 years before he was released, the president, P.W. Botha, had declared a state of emergency, stricter curfews, stricter punishments, broader powers for the police. Violence was escalating. There were sanctions against South Africa. There were continued demands for Mandela's release. In 1988, Mandela contracted tuberculosis, and Botha was worried that he might die in prison, so he offered Mandela a deal. He could be released in return for publicly condemning the violent resistance, and Mandela refused the deal. He said, "Let Botha renounce violence. Let him say that he will dismantle apartheid." The following year, Botha left office. The new president, F.W. de Klerk, was a right-wing conservative, but he saw that times were changing and that the economy would collapse if he did not bring apartheid to an end. And on February 2, 1990, he gave a speech to Parliament that amazed his supporters. He announced that he was lifting the ban on the African National Congress and that he was freeing Nelson Mandela. He left prison, Mandela, just after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, February the 11th, under a blue sky, walked through the prison gates, holding hands with his wife, Winnie, rode to the Cape Town City Hall, where he addressed a huge gathering, where he announced that the armed struggle against the regime would continue. And Mandela said, "I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve, but if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die." Here's a poem for today by Tess Gallagher, Choices. "I go to the mountainside of the house to cut saplings and clear a view to snow on the mountain. But when I look up, saw in hand, I see a nest clutched in the uppermost branches. I don't cut that one. I don't cut the others either. Suddenly, in every tree, an unseen nest where a mountain would be." Tess Gallagher's poem Choices from her collection Dear Ghosts, published by Grey Wolf Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right. Thank you, Garrison Keeler. I appreciate that. Writer's Almanac. Scott Burton back in the studio here, and I've just been joined by Gassineau, fourth grade teacher extraordinaire, Mr. Ben Kriegmont. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you, Ben. I've had the chance of to work with you in the past, and I really enjoy your teaching style, and it's nice to have you on the air today to talk about the Gastineau Chess Club.
Yeah, it's quite a group. It's been a lot of fun.
So, let's see. Elementary school here in Juneau is kindergarten through fifth grade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fifth grade. So tell us how it breaks down for the chess club.
Well, this year, for the first time, we started two groups. And we have a pawns group, and they meet once a week. And those are mostly kindergarten, first, and second graders. We've got some older kids that are brand new chess players. And then we have our knights group. And the knights meet on Thursdays.
Okay.
And they're more of the upper elementary grade kids who know all the moves and are working more on strategy and end game techniques and things like that.
So what's the youngest pawn that you have right now, would you say, give or
take?
We
have a room of, there's 24 kids in that group, and probably 12 of them are kindergartners. And
wow.
So, when they're sitting at the table, their head's barely above their back row of knights and kings and queens.
And how much of the game can they grasp at that age?
Well, we've been introducing one piece per week. So, the first week, all we did were pawns, and we got up and we walked in one giant step or two giant steps. We stepped diagonally to grab a friend, and then it's awful cute and a lot of fun. And then the next week we introduced knights, and we got everyone to call them knights instead of horsies. That was a big step, and we played a lot of games with the knights and the pawns. Each week we introduce a new piece, and we're slowly getting there. Next week we'll introduce the kings and queens, and we're going to try to play full boards next week.
All right. And then the knights, you'd say in general
Third, fourth, and fifth graders, and they range from kids who understand all the basic moves to kids who have a lot of pretty advanced strategies.
Okay. And I suspect they'll be playing themselves quite a bit. Will you guys also go and play other schools? And what are you thinking?
You know, that would be something we'd love to do. And I know at different times there have been chess clubs that met at different schools. Maybe if someone hears about this happening, and certainly throw out the invitation to play some games, I'm sure that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, great. What do you find that chess does for these kids?
Well, you know, the nicest thing, I think, is that it gives them an opportunity to play and interact with another person. You know, and so it's not a video game. They're picking up real pieces. We stress sportsmanship. You know, all the games end with a handshake and a good game, even if it's just a practice drill. And there's just so much thinking skills and to getting the kids to start to plan moves into the future and what the consequences might be. And creative thinking, problem solving. I mean, the number of studies that have shown chess correlating to higher reading scores and test scores, they're really numerous.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun and a great event or a great activity to be doing. What are some of the challenges you're finding as an administrator?
The biggest challenge right now is resources. Mm. We have the club after school, and most of the kids walk home or get picked up, we just don't have enough boards. So about 4 years ago, we had a parent, Deb Lowenthal, who donated some really nice chess sets. And the small little chess sets are hard for the kids to use because the pieces don't look distinctive enough.
Okay.
They confuse pawns for bishops.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons why we like to have a little bit bigger, nicer set. We have 12 boards now, and we're capped. So I have 24 kids in each group because all the boards are filled up. And we've got a wait list, so... Yeah, if we could find some money to get some more boards, we could certainly expand the club. And that's, I think, the biggest challenge is we've got kids that want to get in.
Yeah, absolutely. And what if somebody had a nice chessboard out in the community that they're not using anymore? Would that be helpful?
That would be helpful, yeah. Our boards, after 4 years of a lot of games and they get used at recess, they're starting to get beat up. So we've got a couple queens with tape holding their crowns on. But, we could replace some boards and supplement boards with other sets. It would be great. The one nice thing about having consistent boards, like I said, is for the kids to just, when we're learning the pieces,
right,
a consistent shape makes it a lot easier.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, if somebody wanted to contribute to the Gastineau Chess Club, how could they do that?
Probably the easiest way would be to call the Gastineau Elementary School.
All right. What's the number down there?
796-5075. And, it'd be nice. You know, we have some folks whose students are in the chess club have made contributions. We're trying to get T-shirts for the kids. And
nice.
And we'd like to start to – I'd like to get some time clocks so we could start to get some of our more advanced players into a timed game system.
Right. Well, it sounds great, Ben. Thank you for doing that. I'm sure the kids are enjoying it. It sounds like they are. They got a wait list and everything.
Yeah, thanks for having us. And, if someone would like to – come down and challenge some of the kids, we could make that happen too.
Oh, wow. Well, that sounds great. If you want to do something like that, donate a chessboard, donate some money so they can get more chessboards, or perhaps even some time, you can get a hold of Mr. Ben Kriegmann at 796-5075. Ben, anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks for having me in and giving me a chance to share about these wonderful kids.
Oh, anytime, Ben. I appreciate it. All right, I'm going to play for you now a little music off of a CD called The Anchor in the Sail by Jessica Campbell. She'll be here playing at UAS on March 4th. So here's a song by Jessica Campbell called Time.
Time.
welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I've been joined in the studio by Yakusuke Dakehide Principal Kristen Garreau. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
It's nice to have you in today.
It is nice to be here.
All right. So, Yakusuke Dakehide. We don't get to hear about that high school as much as Thunder Mountain or Juno Douglas High School. Tell us about it.
Well, Yakusuke Dakehide is a great program that, you're right, we don't hear about it as often as the two major comprehensive high schools. And it's changed a lot in the past 20 years since it's kind of, its existence has morphed into what it is now, which is its own high school that issues its own diploma. It started off as kind of as a way to catch kids who had dropped out of school completely.
Okay.
Who'd been out of school for at least a year.
Okay.
That was the initial audience for the school. And it was a small group that really wanted to get kids back in and get their diploma versus just letting them out to get their GED, but really providing them an opportunity to get back into the school and earn their diploma. And it's kind of gone from there, and now we have, excuse me, we have about 100 students at the Marie Drake building who are enrolled as students in Yakusuke Dakehide, and we can issue them diplomas, and we're our own unique program as an option for students in the Juno School District for high school students.
All right. And is it still correct to call it an alternative high school?
It is. Yep.
And so what about it makes it alternative?
Well, so really our target audience are still the students who've struggled to stay in school for whatever reason that's going on in their life, in or out of their control. That's just either put them behind academically, where they're not ready, they don't have the credits to graduate on time with their peers, or there's just something that's not clicking for them at the traditional high school. And so we have a smaller environment and some different programs that really have some teacher-student connections that provide that safe place for people to be, to finish school, to maybe catch up. Who knows what's happened in their life that put them back a little bit, and so they're catching up and moving on.
All right. What do classes, you say there's about 100 students enrolled right now?
Yep.
And what do class sizes look like there?
They vary.
Uh-huh.
We have classes of 20, and we have classes that are in the teens.
Okay.
They're smaller class size. We know that is an important factor for us, for that student population, is a smaller environment, smaller class size, important connections with adults. And so, classes are smaller.
All right. Yeah. And Homebridge, how are the two related?
So the two are not really related any more than Homebridge is related to any other school in the Juno School District. Homebridge is an option for kids who, for whatever reasons going on, where they can't really be in school full time. And they can enroll in correspondence programs or homeschool programs and get their education outside of the school building.
Okay.
So for whatever reason, if the choice for the family is that being in a traditional school building isn't really a fit for their family, then they can enroll with us, and we can provide them guidance in terms of purchasing courses and getting them enrolled in academic courses. That in any grade level, we offer services to students kindergarten through high school.
Oh, wow.
And they choose a home school. So they have, you know, they're a regular student at, say, Thunder Mountain or GDHS or any of the middle school or elementary schools. But then they come to us for some of the materials that they need for their coursework. And the unique thing about Homebridge as opposed to other correspondence programs that students can enroll in or homeschool programs is that students in Homebridge can still enroll in a course or two at their home base school. So they could be a high school student and take chemistry and still be enrolled in a homeschool program at home for the rest of their day. And so the district provides that to them as part of the program. So they're not added. It's not an additional cost or a fee. Other programs, it's an additional part of their allocation or an additional fee. So they get to
Interesting.
They get to do that.
So
yeah.
they can integrate to a certain extent, but then head back
right,
home.
Right, right. If there's a particular subject area, you know, we have kids. I just ran into one in the hall today who was checking in with her homeschool, her Homebridge teacher, and does correspondence programs at home, and then is in band at Thunder Mountain, and that is working really, really well for her, and it's really great to see her, and she's happy doing band, and she's happy with her program at home with her family. So it's great to see all the different varieties of things that people can do in terms of choosing educational options in Juneau.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty exciting. There's a fit for everybody. So
it's like homeschool, except that the teachers at the schools are doing the work and the parents don't necessarily need to?
No, it's like homeschool in that we are helping them find the homeschool curriculum to purchase. And then if they want to, they can connect with a teacher at a school and take a course from a teacher. We have an instructor on staff at Homebridge who checks in and helps monitor people's progress. She's not really instructing them in their courses. Mm-hmm. She's checking in and making sure things are moving along.
So parental involvement is still
really important.
Part of it, I see.
Yeah.
All right. It sounds like two alternative options for students.
Yes. Yes.
Between Yakuske and Homebridge. And like you say, among the wide variety of educational opportunities we have in Juneau.
Yeah, now is the time when I know 8th grade families are paying attention to which high school they're going to attend. I know those school choice cards are due Friday, February 14th. So it's just good to know. I think it's really good to know all the different options that are out there for folks.
Right, right. If somebody wanted to learn more about Yakuske Dakahiti or Homebridge, what's a good resource for that?
So a good place to start would be the Juneau School District's website.
Okay.
That's juneauschools.org.
Okay.
And then under optional programs, you'll find the link to the Homebridge program.
Okay.
And then under high schools, you'll find a link to Yakuske Dakahiti Alternative High School. And you can see more about our programs and what we offer.
And if somebody was more of a person-to-person type, where should they go?
They should stop by the office at Marie Drake.
Okay.
Both of those programs are housed in Marie Drake. And we have folks who can come and who will chat with you and can answer your questions and talk to you about all of our programs.
And Marie Drake is right across from the downtown cemetery. Is that correct?
It is. It's right by the turf field. It's where the planetarium is.
Okay.
It's right downtown between Harborview and JDHS.
All right. Well, lots of educational opportunities here in Juneau. Principal Kristen Guerreau, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Explaining them. Anything else you'd like to add?
No. I just think it's exciting, all the different choices that people have here. It's great.
I agree. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Thank you.
thanks for joining me on a June afternoon here today on February 11th, 2014. Tomorrow on a June afternoon, Ann Fuller will be your host, and she will have some folks in to talk about the Girl Scouts dinner and auction, which will be this weekend. And we'll talk with Scott Riley about changes at the Foggy Mountain Shop. And KXLL's own Jesse Herman Haywood and Annie Bartholomew will update us on the new Spot Check series that those two are out working on. Fun new series. And we'll also hear about Eagle Crest. I noticed that it's trying to snow out there right now. And you'll also hear National Native News, Writer's Almanac, and more with Ann Fuller. You are listening to KTOO-FM, and we rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Ock Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210 in AS in Excursion Inlet in Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable and Digital Channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on K2 comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasters and listeners like you. The weather, strong wind through this evening, and mostly cloudy, locally windy, chance of snow tonight, lows 6 to 14, northeast wind 10 to 25, gusts up to 40 near downtown Juneau and Douglas diminishing late. Tomorrow, decreasing clouds, slight chance of snow, highs around 20, northeast winds 10 to 20, decreasing to 10 in the afternoon. Wind chill to 20 below in the morning, so heads up for that. Thursday, cloudy, chance of snow, highs around 28. Wow, heat wave. Northeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Friday, it just says snow. Thursday night, snow likely, lows 19 to 25. And then on Friday, it just says straight up snow, highs around 33. So that's exciting for skiers and snowboarders alike, not shovelers. Saturday, rain and snow likely, highs around 35. Saturday night, snow likely, lows 22 to 28. Sunday and Sunday night, snow likely. Wow, highs around 33. It looks like winter's going to be coming back here with a little bit of a payback, I wonder. Right now, Juneau Airport at 17 degrees, downtown Juneau, it's about 22, and out in the valley, it's about 14 degrees. Thanks for tuning in today to a Juneau afternoon, and now stay tuned for All Things Considered.